Oh yeah, 80s hair band music, baby. That is how we do it here at the National Football Post. And let me tell you something, if that does not get you pumped up, I don't know what will. Just talked to Snake Eyes Bowen here at the NFP. He loves the 80s hair band music. He grew up in the 80s. He lived it. So he's our foremost expert, and he's the one telling me to run it. That is how we get you fired up. But I digress for a minute because we have got much, much bigger things to talk about here in the Firestorm today. We're bringing back a big guest coming off a huge win. With that being said, we'd like to welcome back to the Firestorm New Orleans Saints quarterback Drew Brees. Drew, how are you?
Doing good. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Not as good as you guys are. 6-0 after pulling off a 46-34 monster comeback win at Miami last Sunday. And we'll get to that game in a minute. 2 weeks ago, you took down the previously undefeated Giants. And that is when most people around the league started saying that you guys were the team to beat in the NFC. However, a comeback win like you had on Sunday says a lot about a team's character and mental toughness. Obviously, all wins are important, but in your opinion, which of the two wins was bigger for your football team this year?
Well, I think this last weekend's win was the biggest win to date, just because if you look at the way that we've won, you know, our previous games, you know, we've won them by double digits. You know, been situations where, you know, we never really faced a whole lot of adversity in those games, especially late in those games, whereas this game, you know, all of a sudden we're down 21 points in the second quarter, you know, feeling like the game's kind of getting away from us. But, you know, nobody panicked. We stayed very confident and, you know, got in the second half and just felt like, you know, as long as we executed our offense the way that we knew how and defense was talking about just, you know, obviously handling their Wildcat system, you know, going out, getting some turnovers, creating some opportunities for the offense. We just felt like, you know, we had the game under control, you know, despite being down 21 points.
Now, that leads right into my next question. Tell our listeners, what is going through your mind? It's the second quarter. There's just under 9 minutes to play in the first half, and you guys are down 24-3. When you're on the sidelines watching the defense, what are you thinking at that point, and what are you saying your teammates to try to get everyone back on board and to try to turn the ship around?
Well, at that point, you know, everything that could have gone possibly wrong had gone wrong, you know, both offensively and defensively. You know, mm-hmm. We had not done, you know, anything the way that we had talked about. We weren't playing the game the way that we had, you know, talked about playing it. And so we knew that once we could just get back on track and, you know, start playing our brand of football, that we were going to be okay. And obviously, being down 21 points is a lot. And, you know, that you just tell yourself, hey, you know, one play at a time, one series at a time, we can't go and, you know, get 21 points back, you know, in one drive. You know, it's got to be just kind of process here, and let's just stick together and just kind of hammer this thing out one at a time, and that's what we were able to do.
You guys pulled it to 24-10 with 2 seconds left in the first half when you threw caution to the wind and hurdled your body over the offensive line to score from the 1-yard line. Two-part question. First off, you and I talked about this 4 weeks ago. I had advised you that you should start running more often, stop sharing the wealth so much with the rest of the offense, start scoring yourself. Was that play designed because I told you to start running more or because it was the right play call at the right time?
Well, I'm sure that I could really boost your confidence here right now.
Yes,
if
you
I told
could.
You your advice. But that was a critical point in the game, you know, where, you know, you just felt like we're down there 6 inches away from scoring a touchdown. We have the opportunity to go into the locker room with a lot of momentum if we can just get 7 points, you know, instead of three. You know, I just felt like the momentum boost and the emotional boost would be huge. And so, you know, Coach Payton and I talked about it on the sideline and just felt like, you know, we can get this thing in the end zone when we do it. And so we were able to do that. And I just felt like that really helped with kind of the emotional state of where we were at and what we were talking about, you know, doing in that second half, you know, going into the locker room, being down 24-10 as opposed to, you know, 24-3 or 24-6.
Did you realize that was the first time you've run for a touchdown since November 25th, 2007?
Well, now that you mention it, I guess that it is true. I can remember the last one. The last one was at Carolina. So,
yep.
You know, it doesn't happen all that often. and, you know, sure enough, I get 2 rushing touchdowns. First time that's happened since do you know the date for the first time since I've had two rushing touchdowns?
Two in one day? No, I do not. I had to go so far back just to find one. I didn't even know.
I'm thinking it's high school all-star game, the North-South Texas game. That would have been July of 1997.
Good
so
memory.
There's an even better stat for you.
Yeah, that's even better. That's exclusive here to the National Football Post. I love it. Going back to that touchdown, though, Dolphins head coach Tony Sperano said this week that he admitted making a mistake when he called timeout right before you guys ran that play. Now, it had looked like you guys were going to come out and kick the field goal, but then when he burned the timeout, you guys came out and went for the touchdown and got it. Were you planning on kicking the field goal at that point, and did his timeout change your mind?
Well, no, here's the scenario. You know, they call it a touchdown originally because Marcus crosses the goal line with the ball, but then they go and review it. You know, anything inside 2 minutes, they decide up in the booth they're going to review it. Well, it's determined that, you know, his knees are obviously down before the ball crosses. Well, in our minds, you know, they called it a touchdown, so we're sending our, extra point unit, you know, our field goal unit out there to kick what we think is going to be the extra point. Well, then, you know, they kind of called a timeout when we had already kind of decided that we were going to end up, you know, going with that QB sneak, going for it. And, had it been one of these situations where, you know, we would have had to put the offense out there just to spike it, just in order to stop the clock and then get another play, then that's what we would have done. So, I mean, I think regardless of whether they called a timeout or not, you know, we would have been able to get guys out there to spike it and then, go for the next play to try to score.
Now, at this point, you get in the end zone, 24-10 going to the half. You guys only get maybe 15 minutes max in the locker room. And between the time it takes to get in and get out, you really don't have that much time to make adjustments. But you came back out and outscored the Dolphins 36-10 in the second half. What were you talking about in the locker room, and what adjustments did you make to change the course of this game so dramatically?
Well, you know, we just talked about executing our offense. Defense was talking about, you know, doing the things that they had game planned to do going into the game, and, you know, doing what our defense has done, you know, so well all year, which is get turnovers and create negative plays and that kind of thing. And so I think it was very positive. You know, we felt like we had played as bad as we possibly could have played in the first half, and, you know, still had a great opportunity to go out in the second half and turn things around. And it was just very positive and very confident.
One thing you guys did not abandon was the running game. A lot of teams might do that, down two touchdowns in the second half. You guys stuck with it. Now, Pierre Thomas was the workhorse in the first half, but he only picked up 20 yards on about four carries. You turned the ball over to Mike Bell in the second half, who stepped up huge. He picked up 80 yards on 12 carries, including a couple key runs that moved the ball towards midfield and really got the drives going that led to scores down the road. At what point did the coaching staff decide that Bell was the guy they were going to turn it over to?
Well, you know, I think we like the ability to kind of mix up, you know, who's in the backfield at different points in the game. I think all our runners are different type of runners, so I think it's just an adjustment for a defense. And, you know, we kind of just felt like, you know, Mike Bell, it was kind of his time to carry the rock there in the end of the third and the fourth quarter, and he came in and did a tremendous job, as did the offensive line in creating the holes for him.
Okay, we're going to go back to the new feature that we introduced last week here at the Firestorm, in which you take the listeners inside the huddle and break down the anatomy of a successful play. For everyone listening, there's a link underneath the podcast in this article that'll take you to the play Drew and I are about to discuss. Now, there are several big plays in the win over Miami, but this was the one that, as I was watching the game, I thought really swung the momentum in your favor and made it look like you guys were going to come back and pretty much take this thing over. Down 34-24 at the start of the fourth quarter, it's first and 10 on your own 21-yard line when you drop back and hit tight end Jeremy Shockey on a beautiful seam down the middle that he turned into a 66-yard reception. Two plays later, Reggie Bush punched it in from the 10-yard line on a great play where he flew in from the six. That made the score 34-31 Miami. The play with Shockey, break it down what you saw in the defense. You're coming out. It's the first play of the fourth quarter. What did you see in the defense, and did you know you were going to Shockey right away, or is that how it developed?
I had a pretty good idea Shockey was going to get the ball. You know, it's one of these plays where, you know, I'm looking to Marcus Colston, who's the single receiver on the other side of the field, and all day long they had been you know, trying to cheat a safety over towards Marcus's side, you know, just to kind of give that corner some help. And so I came back looking at Marcus. He's my first read. And while I'm looking at Marcus, I'm also kind of bringing that safety further over towards him and opening up that seam, you know, for Shockey to be able to, you know, run through. And kind of knowing it in my mind that, you know, unless Marcus was right wide open off the release, that I was going to come back and be able to, you know, have a nice completion to Shockey. And sure enough, he catches it and then, you know, makes the corner miss the tackle and then basically just stiff arms their free safety all the way down the field, you know, to about the 10-yard line. So it was a great, great individual effort on Shockey's part. And, you know, obviously that was a nice emotional lift, you know, for us, you know, trying to close the gap.
So one of the keys to that whole play was, one, you looking off the safety to create the opening for Shockey, and two, the 25-yard stiff arm he delivered at the end of the play?
Yeah, absolutely.
This coming Monday night, you guys play host to division rival, the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta secondary was torched by Romo and the Cowboys last Sunday. But more importantly, if you guys win this game, you'll be 3-0 in the NFC South with 9 to play. Tell me two things. Is preparing for a divisional rival different? And in addition, what's it like preparing for a Monday night game versus a Sunday afternoon game?
Well, the Monday night game, I mean, everything kind of gets pushed back, you know, during the week. And so I think the key is just to, you know, not get, you know, I mean, the preparation still remains the same, you know, and you still, even though, you know, you're playing one day later, you still just try to stay ahead of the game, you know. But obviously this is our first divisional game of the year, and obviously it's on Monday night football at home. So it's a huge game. And, you know, but as far as our preparation goes, you know, we're just trying to continue to get better each week and just focus on the things that we know we need to do in order to give us the best chance to win. And that's what we've done all year. That's what we're going to continue to do.
Drew, before we let you go, you and I have talked about this a couple times, but it definitely bears being mentioned yet again. You've been doing some terrific work in the New Orleans area with your charity, the Breeze Dream Foundation, which everyone can check out at drewbreeze.com. Tell us what's new with the charity and what you guys have been up to lately.
Yeah, absolutely. Actually, you know, we have a campaign in town called Making the Grade. It's a partnership with OmniBank here locally in New Orleans where, you know, we highlight a lot of the positive achievements of the school system. And yesterday we actually gave seven grants to you know, seven local schools or just in the greater New Orleans area, seven grants of $2,000 each just to kind of help continue to improve their programs and kind of the creative things that they're doing with their students. And so that's, you know, that's a big deal for us and one of our kind of signature campaigns that we're involved with in the community here. And we're actually going on into our fourth year with that campaign. And, you know, other than that, we finished our Rebuilding Dreams in New Orleans campaign, which involved 12 projects, all helping to rebuild schools, parks and playgrounds, athletic fields in New Orleans. We completed that in May to the tune of $1.8 million. And so now we're in the process of identifying kind of our phase two, you know, group of projects that, you know, we're going to be able to go out and fund here over the next few years. And just really excited about, you know, the direction that obviously New Orleans is headed just in regards to continuing to improve education and continuing to improve, you know, infrastructure for schools and parks and playgrounds and rebuilding neighborhoods and that kind of thing.
Always looking out for the city, Drew. That stuff's fantastic. And everyone can check that out at drewbreeze.com. Drew, once again, thanks. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for taking the time out to come on the Firestorm. And best of luck in Week 8 against the Falcons, my man.
Thanks, Joe.
No problem. That was quarterback Drew Breeze of the still undefeated New Orleans Saints. And, man, is that team on a roll right now. Anyone who watched that game on Sunday at Miami, you can't convince me otherwise that this is not the best team in the league right now. And no, it's not because I was just talking to him. That's just fact. You tell me which team is better. Email me, joe.fortinball@nationalfootballpost.com. Let me know what you think if you don't think New Orleans right now is the number one team in the league. That wraps it up for this edition of the Fantasy Firestorm. Thank you for tuning in. For Drew Brees, I am Joe Fortinball. I hope it was good for you because I know it was good for me. We'll see you next time.